Welcome to the Manager Tools Member Podcast for November 2005. Hi everyone, this is Mike Lozan, and welcome to our first podcast exclusively for those who have registered on our site. Mark and I spent some time putting this together as a special thanks for taking the step to register on our site. We plan on doing these, roughly, about once a month. At this point, we haven't worked out the details on the distribution. For now, though, we'll notify you by email when a new member podcast is up on the site, with a link to the appropriate webpage. I apologize, as I do realize that while it may be somewhat of a burden for those of you that use an RSS aggregator, and that you'll need to download the file and manually add it to your aggregator. In the future, we'll create a special RSS feed for those of you who would like to just have it magically appear in your iPod or MP3 player. Please bear with us a bit as we figure this out. A lot of you have asked us for other sources of management insight. In this month's show, Mark and I discuss our reading program, what books we like, and how we go about establishing a systematic way of keeping up with all the written management material out there. So, here we go.
Thanks to the Chicago White Sox spanking the Astros in four games, it's Thursday night, and we're able to get a head start on our podcasting this week.
Yeah, and you being a great baseball fan, this clearly took second priority over the World Series.
You know what? I love watching sports, but simply do not have time. I love other things more, like my kids and work and so on. And so,
get out of here.
Yeah. So, but I do make it a religion to watch the series, the championship series, and the division series, and the World Series. And other than the fact that I don't like seeing their breath when they play up north in October, I wish the season was shortened by about 25 games. I love watching baseball. And, you know, if more people would watch the World Series, more people would watch during the season because the games are so good. Even when somebody sweeps another team. Those are great games to watch.
And you were a baseball player, right? As in high school and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
Football, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I was pretty good at baseball for a while.
Yeah. You were just an athlete.
Whatever you say.
I was in the library most of the time when you were playing baseball.
See, you're smart. You're the leader of this group.
I had to work harder than you.
Right.
But we'll spare people the story of how you beat me out at West Point academically. Kills me to this day.
Yes, we will.
So those of you listening, you probably know that this podcast is specifically for those folks who, you know, our best listeners who've taken the time to register and become part of the Manager Tools family, so to speak. So this is not going out to everybody. It's going out to just you all. As a thank you for supporting us during these last 18 podcasts, now on the 19th. So, thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to say thank you as well. Mike and I both work very hard. We keep long hours. And all I need to do once a day is get a heartfelt thank you note from one of our listeners, and usually it comes from registered subscribers, to make my day. When you take a few paragraphs to tell us that we're spot on, or that it absolutely worked, or that you're using it, you know, as I heard an inventor say on the radio the other day, that it's not enough to invent something. Every inventor wants whatever gadget they make to be used, to be active in the world, as he put it. So when you tell us you're using these suggestions and they're helping you, it really means a lot to us. So we appreciate the fact that you've invested a little extra time and essentially sent us a message by your willingness to register and your active listening that what we do is valuable to you, and that means a lot to us. So thanks for continuing to listen, and when you can give us suggestions, we appreciate that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the folks here also voted for us on Podcast Alley, and we're not going to talk about it right now. We'll talk about it at the end, but I think at the end we'd like to share a story with you about how that actually helps us out quite a bit.
It has specific business benefits for us, which seems absolutely weird, because it's not as if the Gartner Group is evaluating it. It's not like J.D. Power gave us an award, but it still has business ramifications for us.
Yeah, and we didn't expect that, to be honest. That's not, that was not our objective at all. And as it turns out, now that we've seen the impact of it, boy, we'd like to continue to be where we are, which is, at least today, we're number one in the business podcast, and we're in the top 50, actually in the top 40.
Top 40, yeah.
Of, you know, all podcasts as voted for at Podcast Alley. Now, we're not fooling ourselves believing that that represents the definitive list and ranking of podcasts by popularity across the nation.
We've discussed this, Mike, that there really, in the beginning of any industry, there's rarely a definitive ranking. There's rarely a definitive set of guidelines where this is still an industry or a phase or a fad or a craze or whatever that's in its infancy. And Podcast Alley is one way to do it. And it's considered legitimate. Maybe in a year or two, there'll be an aggregated, consolidated way to measure. But for now, it works.
Yeah, and again, I don't think it represents a ranking necessary of the number of listeners out there. And you agree, Mark, that's not what we're trying to do.
Right.
We don't fit the mold of what probably the vast majority of podcast listeners are looking for. So we're not trying to be Adam Curry or anything like that. But I think what it does represent is the votes represent a voice of a vote of satisfaction from those folks that are listening to us and that we're resonating a little bit and we're addressing the need they expect us to. So from that perspective, I think it's very, very, very satisfying from our part.
Yep. Well, good.
So we'll share something at the end. In the meantime, we thought we'd do something special for y'all today. We've got a lot of questions from folks as to what are we reading, what are other sources of education that managers should be looking at. And Mark and I both believe that reading is a lifetime habit and a necessary habit if you want to be an effective manager. You can't manage if you don't read. And if you can manage and you're not reading, you're not growing, and that by definition kind of excludes you from the ranks of the professional manager, because things move fastly. The principles don't change, but there's a lot to learn. And so today I think we'll just cover, you know, some of the top books that we've enjoyed and kind of point you in direction in terms of a strategy for learning beyond just books. There are periodicals and other sources of information that you should be reading. And just like we do on our normal podcasts, there is a process or a protocol, if you will, for keeping abreast of this kind of information and furthering your professional education.
I just don't think anybody who's listening, for that matter, any manager, can consider themselves an effective professional manager unless they engage in regular reading. You get to pick the books. We have some recommendations and some other recommendations beyond just books, including periodicals. And also we have some suggestions for how to fit them into your schedule. Some of them are very obvious, but some of them are probably not so obvious. So we hope to help those of you who do not consider reading to be one of your go-to tools. We hope you start considering it something that's really necessary for your professional development. And the old saying applies here. The person who can read and doesn't is no better off than the person who can't read.
I agree. Now, clearly, one of the reasons we do the podcast, we understand that taking the time to read, as important as it is difficult these days, and we hope to augment your reading through these podcasts, taking advantage of time at the gym or time in your commute where you can listen to these podcasts and further your education. That is not to say that we believe you shouldn't read. You absolutely should. So Mark, let's talk. You have, a pretty good structure in terms of how you've recommended your clients how to approach reading in general for the professionals in the management field.
Yeah, most people think of books immediately, and so they spend some time in the business section at Borders or Amazon or Barnes & Noble or what have you, and that's great. But really, your professional reading starts well before that. Any executive worth his or her salt is engaged in reading some periodicals on a regular, obviously on a periodic basis. And let's talk about what those are. And one caveat, while we, Mike and I, have both been overseas many, many times, our business careers have been decidedly American. We know there are many listeners out there who are in Europe and Australia and New Zealand and elsewhere and in Asia. We simply can't make solid recommendations for our overseas subscribers, overseas listeners, other than Mike and I both think highly of The Economist. We would love to hear from you about what you recommend. We do know that the American business management book industry really dominates the world. And so these books that we recommend absolutely apply, and many of the periodicals have European or Asian editions, and we recommend those as well. But more tailored than that, we are not. We recognize it's a weakness, and we're hoping that our community of listeners will give us some recommendations in that
regard. Yeah, we'd love to hear that.
Yeah. Okay, that said, folks, let's start with the basics. If you're not reading the Wall Street Journal every day, you are losing ground to your contemporaries. And you notice I use the word contemporaries and not peers. You're not their peer if they're reading the journal every day, and you're not. You just happen to be at roughly the same place in your career, but they will ultimately pass you by, all of the things being equal.
Why is that exactly? What do they get? What do you get out of the Wall Street Journal?
Well, first of all, I want to tell a little hint to people. Somebody told me once they don't read it because it's so thick. And there's an old saying in business schools that, you know, particularly among finance people, the iBankers, investment bankers, and the finance people, and they say if it wasn't reported in the journal, it didn't happen. I love that. Now, I happen to be kind of the opposite of that, in the sense that I, as a way to simplify my life after reading the journal for close to 20 years, the first thing I do when I get the journal, or when my assistants get the journal, we throw away the third section, or now what is the money and investing section. I just throw it away. It's full of complex stuff about financial stuff that I simply don't understand. I do understand it, but I don't want to know it. I don't believe the daily swings in the market make any difference to me. I have not found any correlation there between my success and knowing that. Now, look, if I was an iBanker, if I was in banking, if I was in consumer finance or even corporate finance, I'd read it religiously, that third section. But that's one way to simplify what you read. When we talk about periodicals, there are parts of periodicals we recommend you not read. But the fundamental thing about the journal is you need to keep up with the nice mix of professional, I mean business, and also newspaper, essentially news items, because they have a slant toward things that affect business. They aggregate things well, so they touch on things that are both very tactical at the daily level, but also do some great reporting more broadly. It wins Pulitzer Prizes all the time. And the single best column that I read, now this is really not a recommendation, but I will tell you, the single best column that I read on a weekly basis is Walter Mossberg's personal technology column. Mossberg is brilliant. He's dead on. And if any of you know Mossberg, you will know, you will recognize when I say it, one of the reasons we like him so much is Mossberg is specifically focused on things that you can use, how it affects you. And that's exactly what Manager Tools are all about. So we love him because Mike and I both are gadget guys and we love technology, and he has the same approach that we do, which is he gives recommendations of, if you're going to buy a PC, this is what you should buy. And we think Manager Tools has that same sort of look and feel to it.
Yeah, and you know, you're all podcast fans, or you wouldn't be listening to us.
Oh, that's right.
You could go to podcast411, which is www.podcast411.com. They do a great show over there, and what Rob does with Podcast 411 is interview. It's once a week, but all the shows are interviews of people in kind of podcast land. And interestingly enough, he did one on with Walter Mossberg, which was very nice to listen to. So go ahead over there and listen to that. That's something that
I think Mossberg also has he's also a regular on a TV show at CNBC. I don't watch TV that much, so I haven't seen it other than on the web. But he's good. He's exceptionally good. By the way, it's not enough to sneak one off of somebody else's desk every once in a while at the office. You need to get it, subscribe to it, have it delivered to your home, sit down in the chair, and as you'll learn later, turn off the dang TV and read the journal for 20 minutes. It's okay if you read it at the end of the day. It's okay if you throw away the third section. It's okay if you don't read all the announcements by every company about who got promoted where. You should be reading the Wall Street Journal Look at all the executives in your company. If it's a big company, if it makes more than $100 million a year, they all have it delivered as part of the corporate budget. Simple.
Yeah.
Done.
It applies not only to the Wall Street Journal, but some of the other periodicals we're talking about. You know, the state of business is not a point in time. It's
yes.
a evolution. And part of being an effective manager is learning how to spot trends. And if the best ones spot them before everybody else does. But to do that, you have to be paying attention to what's going on. And you'll only get that by continuous reading and listening and engagement in the business culture and environment.
Your brain can't make the connections if it doesn't get the raw material in there to get mixed around. Next, you ought to be reading your local daily paper every day. If you want to aggregate it and read it twice a week and read three or four at a time, that's fine. You know, unless you really need to go find a used car for your son or daughter, throw away the classifieds, throw away the real estate section if you're not in the real estate business or the real estate market at the moment. Read the front page. Read the second and third page of the front section. Read the business section, obviously. Sure, read the comics. Read the sports section. You should know what's going on in your town. Of course, we believe that business people ought to be leaders in their communities. And if you're going to be a leader in your community, you ought to know what's going on in your community. So when you get introduced to somebody at a party for your company, you don't put your foot in your mouth by saying, I'm sorry, what is it you do, when this person's been on the cover of the local paper for the last 3 or 4 months, is leading a huge charity drive, or making $1 billion for their company, whatever the case might be. You simply need to be well-read, and that starts with the day-to-day business and community events that shape your life, and that means the journal and your local paper. Going on, taking a little higher level, now you got to look at, okay, what is the stuff that comes out weekly and monthly that you ought to be looking at? The business magazine that is hands down the best business magazine is Fortune. Some people often mention Fortune and Forbes in the same sentence, same breath. I don't consider Forbes as even close to holding a candle to Fortune magazine. If you're reading Forbes, I suggest you cancel and switch. Forbes is much more for owners of companies. It tends to have a lot more private equity discussions. It tends to have a lot more, if you just look at the advertisements, it tends to be skewed toward rich individuals, wealthy individuals, entrepreneurs, and so on. They tend to be very light on management coverage, a lot more on financial coverage. Now, look, it may be great if you're in that business, if you're in the financial business, but quite frankly, there are other journals that you should be reading besides Forbes. Fortune is the perfect blend of timely news and larger, more strategic articles, and they just do a great job of discussing management. And when they describe what it is a line manager does at a company, whether it's Tyson's Chicken or Applied Materials or Intel or Procter & Gamble, Folgers Coffee, Southeast Bank, or, you know, Wachovia, you can bet they did a great deal of reporting, and that's an accurate appraisal of what it is that manager's life is like. Often I encourage high school and college kids to look at those simply to give them a sense of what it is a salesperson does. So often, for instance, in sales, people don't have a good understanding of it, or they have a knee-jerk negative reaction to it, and they need to read about it to understand what it really is. Business Week is okay, but it tends to be a little bit too tactical, and again, not enough management coverage. So often they cover a company as a product and a financial result. Well, that product is built by people, and the financial results are a function of how well the people sell that product. And that's what Fortune does better than anybody else.
Yeah. How about that stuffy old Harvard magazine?
Mike mentions the Harvard Business Review because last year I think my Christmas gift to him was a subscription.
It was. Yes, my best Christmas present I got, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Harvard Business Review, HBR, to those of us who subscribe, is the gold standard of business school magazines. It covers management better than any other magazine. It's terribly expensive. It's over $100 for like 6 or 8 issues a year, and absolutely worth every penny. I read every article, even though 5 years ago when I was subscribing, I wouldn't read the articles about financial derivatives or how to conduct multinational negotiations in the finance business, which I would just kind of roll my eyes and go, what are the chances my consulting firm is going to be involved in that? Not very much. But in terms of in-depth and insightful management coverage, and often deeply detailed with more data than you can shake a stick at. Nothing touches the Harvard Business Review. When I think of the 10 best business articles I've ever read, 9 of them are out of HBR. They just have a series of classic articles.
I didn't get it with this subscription you got me, and maybe because I had a previous subscription, but several years back when I first started reading Harvard Business Review, as part of the subscription, I got a red book with the top, 20 classic articles, which was just fantastic.
In fact, didn't we just do a podcast recently, the last one was on layoffs, right?
Yeah.
And I think we referred to one of the articles that's in that red classics issue called The Hard Work of Being a Soft Manager, which talks about how to do layoffs in a compassionate way. Peter Drucker's, there are several Peter Drucker articles in there. The article that introduced The Discipline of Teams by Katzenbach, which is a classic business book, is in there as well. Over and over and over again, HBR blows everybody else away. And that's not to say, look, the Kellogg one, the one from Sloan, from Duke,
I like
they're
Sloan
all good.
Management Review. I like that as well.
What's that?
Sloan Management Review.
It's very good.
I don't subscribe to it anymore, but I used to enjoy that quite a bit as well.
Yeah. I think in the same way, I think you definitely need to be subscribing weekly or monthly. Probably monthly is better, depending upon your choices, to a journal that relates to your industry. We don't have time to go cover all the industries and what we recommend. They're different in every case. If you need a recommendation, let us know. But it's really easy. You should look at what executives in your firm subscribe to and subscribe to that.
If you're in IT, go into your CIO's office when you get a chance and look at what he or she is reading, and there you go. Start reading that.
Because
guess what? When they 2 weeks from now, when there's, some hot topic, guess what? At least, 50% of the time, it's coming from one of those periodicals. They read something, it catches their attention, and then it becomes a hot topic within the organization. Wouldn't it be great if you were in the position to have an intelligent conversation about it because you read the same article?
Yeah. Perfect. Now, I had a kid tell me once, Mike, he says, well, I can't subscribe to like all 5 of them. I said, well, fine. Ask if you can borrow one. Look at it and see if you like it. Find a subscription card and try it. And then if you get a couple and it's really bizarre or you don't think it's working for you, write cancel on your subscription. Don't pay. Magazines do this all the time. I've talked to people in the magazine, the publishing business. They don't mind it at all. They really believe that they ought to be as good as they're only as good as their content. If you don't like the content, they don't want to keep sending it to you and have the cost without you getting a benefit. So then try another one. Essentially become a serial startup on magazines and see which ones you like.
Yeah, and it's growing. It's not completely there yet, but a lot of these magazines, for example, Wall Street Journal has an online version.
Yes.
A lot of these magazines and resources are starting to publish RSS feeds. So if get yourself a news aggregator. Yep. FeedDemon is the one I use, and subscribe to the RSS feeds that some of these journals have. And you can, with an RSS with a news, aggregator client on your desktop, you can get through a lot of information very, very quickly. I found that to be very effective these days in trying to keep up with everything.
I don't believe anybody under the age of 45 in the business world today can survive with the amount of information that's available, that's available to competitors and customers and so on, without an aggregator, without FeedDemon or something like it on their desktop, getting all these news feeds and then just scanning them. And then just saying to yourself, okay, there are 2 or 3 more I want to know more about. I'll look at the online version, or I'll go ahead and read the hard copy that I've got on my desk or that somebody else has got on their desk. Just scanning it at a high level will give you some interesting insights that you wouldn't have if you weren't looking at it at all. Now, I also want to mention a couple of periodicals, Mike, that get some press, but I have found them to be lacking a little bit from a management perspective, and that's Fast Company and Business 2.0. I happen to like both of them. They tend to be fairly technical, and I think our audience is skewed a little bit technical, in part, I believe, because podcasting's audience is there.
Of course, it's a fad to ignore if you
absolutely
read Business 2.0.
Business 2.0 called podcasting the number one fad to top, the number one of 9 fads to ignore. And that just redoubled our interest in providing manager tools over podcast.
And that's why we're not recommending Business 2.0.
Ye Actually, both you and I subscribe to it, but it's a little bit too technical. It doesn't really get to management. It doesn't really talk strategically. The articles are really short. And the first few times I read Harvard Business Review, I remember thinking, these articles are really long. And that was really a function of my bias that I had learned by reading only daily periodicals or shorter stuff. What I learned was the real lesson. When you're talking about human behavior, you don't learn it in a paragraph. It takes a while. We encourage you to read whatever you like. If you're reading more, more is better when it comes to professional development. But Fast Company and Business 2.0 are not all that great. The best quote I ever heard about Fast Company, and I'd been subscribing for several years, and I just felt like it wasn't all that great. And a friend of mine sent me a note saying, hey, I want you to read this article for Fast Company. I like Fast Company, except that sometimes I think if killing your employees was what became trendy, they'd write an article endorsing it.
It's just a little too trendy.
What's that?
Yeah, it's a little pop or trendy.
Yeah, exactly.
But it can be enjoyable. I enjoy both of them. I just don't think it has the in-depth thought that some of these other journals we've talked about do.
Yeah. If somebody said, Mark, what do you subscribe to? I subscribe to the Journal. I subscribe to my local paper. I admit it, I subscribe to the New York Times. I subscribe to Fortune, the Harvard Business Review, and two other management journals, which are so obscure as to not be important, and you have to be a member of a club to subscribe. And I think that's it. I subscribed to a couple of more from Harvard and found that they were mostly being copied by they were copying stuff that was in the Harvard Business Review. So that's really it. Yeah, can we move on to books now?
Yeah, let's talk about a few books. There's obviously a lot of them we can't cover.
Yeah.
A great number, but let's talk about 10 or so books that we'd recommend folks read if they haven't already.
And you know what? This is not going to be our top 10 because it's too hard. There are too many genres, and these really are slanted towards management, say strategy or marketing, versus say strategy or marketing, which are very important things to do in a company to have a good strategy and have good marketing. If you want more specific recommendations from us about project management or marketing, whatever, let us know. We'll be happy to make some recommendations. These are the ones that we have found the most powerful, most helpful, most insightful about management. They're not really in any particular order other than the best book that's ever been written about management comes first. And it's also, I think, if it's not the shortest, it's one of the two or three shortest. And the most effective book, the best book I've ever read about management is The Effective Executive by Peter Drucker. Mike, please echo here that I have been saying this about this book for years.
I knew what you were going to say before. I knew exactly what you were going to say. I think you've actually bought me at least three copies.
Three copies.
You can never remember whether or not you had given me one or not. You know I've read it. But
right.
I think you've given me actually three. And they're all signed by you. So
yeah.
Maybe I should give one of those away as a prize to somebody.
There you go. Yeah. Given to Mark and then given by Mark to Mike and then given by Mike to someone else. It's available all the time. It's in softback. It's probably $10. It's written years ago and it's still dead on accurate. Anything by Drucker, of course, is good. He's the smartest guy that's ever thought about business. And I love reading business books. I read 100 of them a year, if not 200 in a good year. And he just blows everybody away. The most valuable thing he has in that book is a lesson that if you don't learn it, you can never be at the top of your game. And that is, you must control the single most precious resource you have that is non-renewable, and that is your time. He recommends doing a time study. And that book taught me one of my most important lessons, that when I'm asked to coach an executive, the first thing I do before I even sit down and watch them work, I say, show me your calendar. And then after I've seen 6 to 8 weeks of their calendar, I say, now tell me what your priorities are. And easily 75% of the time, a manager's or an executive's calendar does not match what their stated priorities are. And I got to tell you something, folks. Your priorities are nothing more than an aggregation of how you spend your time. That's the reverse engineering of priorities. If you say your priorities are A, but you spend all your time on B, not true. Your priority is B. That's what you're communicating to your organization, and that's what your organization will respond to. That's why so many people don't like top management. They say A, and they do B. So, Effective Executive. If there's only one book you get that one. It reads very differently from any book you've probably ever read before, unless you're familiar with Drucker. Doesn't matter. It's still the best. All right, I'm off my soapbox. Again, in no particular order, another book I really, really like. It's called The Heart of Change by John Kotter, K-O-T-T-E-R. Anything by Kotter is really good. He has another book called What Great Managers Really Do, and it's exceptionally good. he has an article in there about what a general manager's life is like, and it's fascinatingly insightful for people who wonder how it is that senior people go from meeting to meeting that are 15 minutes long and get a lot done. Well, that's the life of an executive. You don't get to block out 8 hours of time all at once to sit and think strategically. The heart of change is really a step-by-step, I think there are 8 steps, for how to change your organization, how to lead a change initiative in your organization. And the key insight that's in there over and over and over again, proven in my life, is that you need a compelling emotional story. The heart of change tells you what to do and how to do it, and it gives many examples from the real world of people who changed their companies and also changed efforts that failed because they didn't follow their recommendations. Heart of Change, if you read it, you will know how Hirschman & Company is, when we're hired to lead it, to consult on leading a change initiative, that is the playbook we use in that book by John Cotter. Another guy who's exceptionally well known in the business book community right now, so we want to allude to him, but we have a caveat, and that's Jim Collins. He wrote Built to Last and Good to Great. He's often quoted in Fortune. If you get Fortune magazine, you read the recent 75th anniversary edition about decision-making, Collins is quoted in there extensively. And I really think in 5 years, these two books will not be on my list. But if you're having a discussion about management today with other people who read management books, Built to Last and Good to Great are going to come up, so you might as well read it. There's a lot of good stuff in there, but I just don't think they're as timeless as people might want them to be. Just my opinion. Another top book, we're going to do a little tongue-in-cheek recommendation here, and that is The Effective Manager by Mark Horsman. Maybe it'll be by Mike Ozan and Mark Horsman. It's not written yet, but saying that name out loud will make me move in the right direction and write the book that my clients and friends have been telling me I should write for years.
Yeah, if you would all just do me a favor and just, everyone who listens to this, write Mark an email and tell him to write the darn book. I cannot tell you how long we've talked about this.
Yeah,
he's got the outlines. It's all in his head. He just has to put it down.
Yeah,
pen to paper. So write him and just embarrass him so much that he finally sits down and writes it. And we'll all be better managers for it. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And The Effective Manager is absolutely an ode and paid in homage to Peter Drucker for The Effective Executive. And it's based on Mike and I's belief that really there's not enough attention paid on you frontline managers. Or even if you're a director, you don't have to be frontline. The lower level managers who really make companies run. Another book, this one's a little bit off the beaten track. People probably have never heard of it. It's called Influence by a guy named Cialdini, C-I-A-L-D-I-N-I.
The Science of Persuasion. Isn't that subtitled The Science of Persuasion?
What's that?
Isn't subtitled The Science of Persuasion?
I think you're right. Science and Persuasion, maybe, or something like that.
It's an awesome book. Isn't it cool? I love this book.
This book, if you've ever read The Tipping Point or Blink, where it talks about how people think and how people interact with others, Influence is a deeply academic book, but written in very accessible language about why people behave the way they do and how to get people to do what you want by influencing them and persuading them by stating one price when you want to get another one. There's a tone to this book that if you read it with the wrong attitude, you could use it manipulatively, but it is so compellingly researched with example after example after example. Your jaw will drop reading this book. And yeah. I read it. I refer to it at least once a week.
Yeah, I love it. I think actually a good book into that, we've had this conversation before, Mark, some couple years ago. A book into that book is one by Jeffrey Pfeffer, Managing with Power, which is about, you know, politics and influence in organizations. And Pfeffer's brilliant. His stuff is great. But Managing with Power, I thought Influence was more of a Influence was more of a kind of a person-to-person exercise in influence and power. Yeah. And Pfeffer's book was more of power at a more strategic macro level.
Strategic and organizational, yes.
Yeah, so
Pfeffer, in fact, Pfeffer's next on my list. He is the best writer, the most learned and accessible writer on human resources and people in large organizations. And there are many writers, but Pfeffer is really, really good. Pfeffer writes a lot of books that are published by Harvard. The book that is most accessible of his is called The Human Equation. Very detailed, talks about the power of people in large organizations, which hopefully you all realize that Mike and I both believe that systems and processes and those things are very, very important, but the most important thing you do is get good people. And then, and Pfeffer says, if you treat them well, you'll do better in the long run, which we find generally to be true as well. Okay, another book. In fact, the best business book on nitty-gritty management issues that has been written in the last 20 years is called First Break All the Rules. And now I'm completely blanking on the author. Oh, I know, Marcus Buckingham. Came out of research that Gallup did. And the research on this book is unbelievable. I think they researched like 80,000 managers, 400 different companies. It's incredible. Brilliant insights and absolutely driven down to the individual manager level. Not corporate, not organizational. What you should do and why you should do it. I learned 7 or 8 things in a book. And by the way, if I'm standing in a bookstore, Mike, one of the things I do, if I see a book that I might be interested in, I'll stand there in front of it and just flip through it for 3 or 4 minutes. And if I get 3 ideas out of it just by looking that are either stated compellingly or give me an insight I hadn't thought of before that I know will work or I believe will help me, I'll buy it. This one has 7 to 10 to maybe even 15 insights that I felt like I could use. So I was blown away by it. Most books never even reach 3. Another book that probably nobody's heard of that for a while was out of print and it broke my heart was a book by Jay Conger called Winning Them Over. I've mentioned this, I think, on our podcast before. This is the single best book ever written about business presentations. It describes how you present to a group, what you look for in a group, how you analyze your group, the audience in advance, and prepare your arguments based on the audience and your raw material. It's a step-by-step formula. It is hard work to do well, but it is very accurate. I use this. All too often, I'm not given enough time to do what I need to do, but it is very accurate, and I find it fascinating. And this leads into a related thing that we can talk about here, Mike, which is the Edward Tufte books on presenting information, which are just some of the most beautiful books ever written.
Yeah, those are and gorgeous presented. Books.
They're probably a little too academic for most people, but Tufte is T-U-F-T-E. And then in a more specific, focused way, a guy named, I want to say it's Gene, but I could be wrong. The last name is Zelazny, Zelazny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
and
you're
he
right.
He wrote, and he used to work for McKinsey and wrote 2 books, Say It With Charts and the other Say It With Presentations, I think is what they're called. And they are the best books that are essentially right close to Winning Them Over. Winning Them Over tends to be more about the people persuasion piece, whereas Zelazny's books are very specifically about how to present information in PowerPoints and slides and graphs and so on. You will be amazed once you read Zelazny's books how wrongly people present information. He absolutely rails against 3D charts. He's really, you know, it's so often we use pie charts when they're not an effective use. Different charts have different reasons for existing, and you should use them for the right reasons. And if you haven't been taught that, and quite frankly, based on what Mike and I see in presentations, most people have not, then you're probably using them incorrectly at times. And these books will set you straight. Gene Zelazny is his name.
And they're real simple to read. They're
yeah,
big
they're short.
They're short.
Yeah, they're probably 100, 150 pages correct. At the most. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're great.
Yeah.
Man, I wish you hadn't brought it up because now I just recalled that I lent them to somebody before leaving my previous company. I didn't get them back. So now, I'm getting a little torqued.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I love books. And as you know, I give them away frequently. I can see 10 copies of some books on my shelf that I need to give away to people. And yet I also have hanging on my bookshelf an article by Roger Rosenblatt that came out years ago in Time Magazine. And it's about borrowing books, and it's a whole essay about, you know, gosh, people come to your house and they see a book and they sort of look through it and they go, gee, do you mind if I borrow this book? And of course you say, do you mind? I say, no, of course not. And take your time. And they say, oh, I'll have it back within a couple of weeks. And under his breath, Rosenblatt says, you liar. You know, you lend books and they never come back. And the last paragraph of the article simply says, why don't for once we summon up our courage, stand our ground, and state what we really mean, which is, what, you want to borrow it? Don't touch that thing. I'll break your arm.
Well, that's like me. Like when I loan money, I just...
Yeah, just
I learned not to count on getting it back. And
yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Another book that relates to communication, since we're talking management and communication is so critical, is the Minto Pyramid Principle, M-I-N-T-O, by Barbara Minto. And I believe, Mike, aren't we can share this, I think, with our registered subscribers. Aren't we in discussions to have Barbara on a podcast?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Absolutely. We've been exchanging emails back and forth, but probably sometime here in November. So
that's great.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's a very expensive book. I think it's maybe $100, and it's a little bit academic, but I think you and I agree, the most insightful book about business writing we've ever read.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Worth every penny. I mean, I've read it twice now. At times it's tough reading. I wouldn't recommend it for a brand new out of college person. But if you struggle with writing and you need a new way to write, this is a place to go to learn it. Let's change gears here a little bit. Go to the other end of the spectrum. Jack Welch's book, Winning. I know people are going, oh boy. You know, there's some people out there who are Jack Welch fans, some who are not. I happen to be a fan. The biography is also good, but I usually don't recommend bios for business reading. So often people tell me, well, I read biographies to learn about stuff. I don't find that when I see people who are reading biographies, I don't see them putting into place the things they learn in biographies. So I worry a little bit about how effective biographies are in terms of a teaching tool. Yeah, I'll tell you, I just finished Jack Welch's book, and I found it exceptional. A lot of detail in there, full of good ideas. And the part he has in there about strategy, simplifying strategy. If you're a low-level or mid-level manager, and you're wondering how strategy is done at the senior levels, and you think it's terribly complex, well, Jack Welch agrees with you. He thinks consultants make it way too hard. And I have found that the best strategies I've worked with are the ones that are pretty simple. A lot of good stuff in there about people management as well. I also have a personal favorite that if you have any interest in customer service, one of the best books ever written on customer service is one by Carl Sewell. He's a car dealer in Dallas, and it's called Customers for Life. Sewell generally believes in the dictum that customers are always right, and he's an incredibly successful business person. And it will probably scare you to read what Sewell suggests when it comes to customer service. And it's just an easily accessible book. I think it's in its 13th or 14th printing. It's been a number one bestseller before. It's fabulous. And again, there's more. We could go on and on and on. But I also want to touch on a couple areas that we've mentioned. First of all, in terms of personal and self-management. personal and self-management. Mike and I are big believers. And chime in here, Mike. Getting Things Done, David Allen's book. Any book that has spawned hundreds of websites by devotees of the book has got to be good. I believe it's the most important personal management book for managers written in the past 50 years. I think it's needed by most people more than Seven Habits. I think if I told two people, one of you read Seven Habits and apply everything, and the other one read Getting Things Done, the person who really applied Getting Things Done would be more effective faster.
I think Getting Things Done is written from a perspective of actually... You know, we talk about changing our behaviors. I mean, this getting things done is nothing but change behaviors in a very, very specific way.
Yep. And I have friends, actually, who have done, we have a couple of friends who have worked for Franklin Covey and are skilled in facilitating Seven Habits. And I love Seven Habits as well. I find that people who read Seven Habits a year later are not using this stuff nearly as well as I find that people who read Getting Things Done are using it, believe in it, and love it even a year later. So Getting Things Done by David Allen and Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, of course, by the highly successful Stephen Covey. And then I have three books that are around career skills that I think because we have so many technical managers, I really... really feel strongly about these. These are probably a little bit out there for some of them, Mike, and yet I still think they're very, very good. First of all, if you're doing a job search, there is only one book worth reading, even if you don't make six figures. And the book is Rites of Passage at $100,000 plus. It's by a guy named John Lucht, L-U-C-H-T. And if you go to Amazon and type in Lucht, you'll find that book. It's really the only book that I recommend. I usually have two or three copies on my bookshelf and just send it to anybody who's getting ready to make a job change. It tells you everything you need to know about recruiters. By the way, if you're not taking recruiters' phone calls and you're a senior manager or an executive, you're making a huge mistake. Mike gets calls all the time to become an executive at growing or existing companies, and you need to know how to handle recruiters and executive recruiters, and that's in there. How to do your resume. By the way, this is all stuff we'll cover, and a lot of it will come right out of rites of passage because I agree so often with John. And how to go through your entire search, how to network, how to talk to friends, how to interview. The whole kit and caboodle is in rites of passage. Then there are two books I want to mention that are related to career skills, sort of career management skills, or more broadly, if you want to admit it, around networking, which I'm sure some of you go, oh, geez, I don't want to do that. I just want to be the smartest person in the room, and I'll get promoted before everybody else. Well, that's not always the way it works. It's not what you know, it's who you know. And even Mike, who is as technically brilliant as anybody I know, we kid each other because he tends to be technically way ahead of me, and I tend to do a little bit better in networking than he does. And he admits all the
just
time.
Just a little bit.
What's that?
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm terrible.
Horseman's first law is not it's all about technology. Horseman's first law is it's all about people.
This whole networking thing is just, I just go back and kill myself. I had some very smart people tell me 20 years ago about how important networking is, and it took me a long time to figure it out. And I do not subscribe to the notion that it's not what you know, it's who you know. I don't believe that.
Right.
I believe it's what you know and who you know.
Right. The problem is all they teach you in high school and college is what to know as opposed
absolutely.
To who you know. The two books.
My kids, and we've talked about it before, but Alex, my 18-year-old, is now in college, and you know, my one instruction to him has been learn everybody in your class, know their names, and keep in contact with them
right.
for a long period of time.
Yep. Yeah, I'm doing the same thing with Kate and Travis. They're both in college, and I tell them that all the time. You know their parents' phone numbers so you can stay in touch with them. You never know when you need somebody's mom or dad's name who don't move so you can get in touch with an old friend.
If it wasn't for your mom's phone number, I would.
Yep.
You and I would not be talking right now.
That's exactly right. Remember that my folks were in Los Angeles, called and found there were, what, 50 horsemen or something in Los Angeles?
Oh, 50. There are 300.
Oh, they're 300. He got lucky
incredible.
And found my
and
mom.
And your mom's was the first one.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And now we're business partners. What do you know? The two books that I recommend around networking, the first one is called Love is the Killer App. It's by Tim Sanders, who used to work at Yahoo. Actually, he may still work at Yahoo.
And you it really is. Love is a killer. Is the killer app?
Love is the Killer App.
I have to admit, I have not read this one.
Oh, it's really, really good.
I may now, but boy, that
yeah.
title just.
Yeah, so, and Sanders was a technology guy and was in marketing at Yahoo and basically discovered that all the technology in the world couldn't get them customers that stuck around. They needed to deliver a relationship to the customers. And he talks about giving and the importance of sharing your knowledge. It's a very open source kind of approach to the world.
You have to hug your customers and that?
Yeah, all that gushy stuff.
Wow.
You know, it's funny. Here we are making joke about it, and yet we're spending our time on Thursday night at 10 or 11 o'clock at night cutting a podcast specifically for people that we think of as our friends, our extended family, the people who are registered subscribers of our podcast. You know, as much as they're paying for this podcast, we ought to be reaching out to them and making them feel like a part of our the community that is Manager Tools. It's not just the two of us, that's for sure.
Right.
We're essentially, I think Sanders would say, bravo, that you're giving away this stuff on a weekly basis as a way to grow a community of like-minded thinkers, to aggregate, to have other people are benefiting from our knowledge. And the more you give, I absolutely believe this, the more you give, the more you get. I believe that even to the point of giving until it hurts, and I have. So yeah, I speak from experience. And then another book that's actually very recent that I find is just full of suggestions and is absolutely a whack on the side of the head for most technology people is called Never Eat Alone. It's by a guy named Keith Ferrazzi. There is a little bit of a tone of the book that suggests that you're reading about a marketing guy, a networking guru, and some of you technology managers would kind of go, ugh. But I am telling you, I gave a presentation recently at Kellogg related to this book, and Ferrazzi was there shortly after me, and I've since talked to him. This book is the best networking book ever, period. If you don't read this book and learn three or four things and start using them, you are missing an opportunity to develop your career fully. I say that to every manager out there. This book is absolutely outstanding. And that's really it, Mike. I mean, there are hundreds more books I could mention. We could talk about them. I'd love to hear from our readers or from our listeners, books that they're reading that they really, really like. And I thought we'd end our suggestions with some ways that they could create time to read more. I've got some. The first thing you can do when it comes to creating time for professional development is to turn off your darn TV. I mean, I just can't tell you how many people. The classic question I ask groups when I'm facilitating is, who can tell me what they were watching 3 weeks ago on TV? 2 weeks ago? 1 week ago? You know, unless it's the World Series, people can't describe it. It has to be something that's an annual event for them to get a lot out of it. Yeah, Seinfeld was a big thing. Yeah, Friends was a big thing. And it's absolutely unnecessary. You'll be able to catch the big ones on reruns. And even with TiVo, I just don't recommend. There's not a lot of really great, great, great programming on TV.
Right. Maybe, or if, you know, I saw another suggestion. I actually read it on a blog some time ago, I think, but I kind of liked it, which was, maybe if you want to watch TV, just stop channel surfing. So if there's a particular show, like West Wing or whatever you want to watch, then go ahead. If it's on 9 o'clock, then turn it on at 9, watch it, and then turn it off. But don't just go turn on the TV and start browsing through channels looking for something to watch. If you simply go at those very specific shows that you're interested in, you'll find that your TV viewing time goes down dramatically.
Yep. No channel surfing. Secondly, I really recommend audio books or abridged books. We hope it doesn't take the place of your Manager Tools podcast on your morning commute. A couple of people have said their morning commute has been transformed because of Manager Tools. We're happy to hear that.
Yeah, God forbid.
Don't get rid
don't
of us.
That.
Another thing, gosh, in your workout, I know there are many people out there who are probably runners. You know, I'm a runner too, but not as well as I'd like. But one of the things I do is I spend time in the elliptical machine and I prop the Wall Street Journal up. I read the Wall Street Journal every day on the elliptical machine at 5 or 6 o'clock at night.
I have no idea in the world how you do that.
And I'm listening to music.
Mark was visiting, I don't know, maybe it was a couple months ago. I took him to the gym and he got on the treadmill and I got on my elliptical machine or whatever it was. Oh my God!
What?
you're going so fast.
Oh yeah,
like I was
that's
standing
right.
still.
You were listening to a podcast, I think, about wine, which, and I'm sure a wine podcast sounds something like this. Oh, it's a lovely color. Look, it's burgundy. I'm listening to, you know, Elvis Presley or the Beatles at 180 beats per minute. Or Rascal Flatts, or some other country music that's reasonably upbeat. I have a iPod Shuffle that I use in workouts that is full of nothing but fast songs. And I try to keep the elliptical machine between 180 and 200 revolutions per minute. And Mike looked over me a couple of times and was like, whoa.
Sweat was flying off you. That's terrible.
Yeah, now you can't do that on a treadmill, because a treadmill, if I were running, I don't think my head would stay still enough. But if I do it on an elliptical machine, I can steady myself with my hands and I prop it up, prop the journal up, and I read it that way. It doesn't work for books. Books don't lay down well enough, for me anyway. Something else you can do I found very helpful when looking at periodicals, not necessarily your daily, but your magazines, is to debone them, to go through them as soon as they come in the mail, tear out all the inserts and so on that keep it from the pages flipping
debone
easily.
Debone them?
Yeah, have you never heard that? It's called deboning.
I know exactly what you mean, but...
Yeah, it's called deboning, yeah. And then what's more, take deboning to the next level and actually tear out the 3 or 4 articles you want to read and throw away the rest. Look, just save yourself the trouble.
Called filleting.
What?
That's called filleting.
Yes. And then, you know what it's like? It's a bit like avoiding channel surfing. Now, hopefully, if you're reading, every once in a while you read something that's a little bit unusual. But if you don't want to this particular week, just take out the 3 or 4 articles you want and carry those around. Another thing that I do is I'll keep...
How would you like your magazine blackened?
What? Say that again?
How would you like your magazine blackened?
Oh.
I'm sorry, I'm in the restaurant business.
I'm just trying to be helpful. That's good.
I'm sorry.
I'd like it to be blackened afterwards. That'd be fine. Oh, God. And then the other thing I do is when I'm traveling, I'll keep, if I know I'm leaving, like for instance, this Saturday, I've got to fly to Washington to see Mike and to do some consulting with my clients in Washington, D.C. next week. And Mike and I are going to spend some time together on Sunday. And I already have 6 or 7 magazines here that I'm going to carry with me. And the beauty of that is when I come home, my briefcase is always lighter because I fill it up with magazines that I'm going to read and throw away.
And then I steal them.
As I'm traveling. What's that?
And then I steal them.
Yeah, exactly. I leave them at Mike's and he reads them. Did I leave a book at your house last time? I think I left a book about management from Harvard.
I know nothing about that.
It must be good. He doesn't want to give it back.
If it had the word toolkit in it, I know nothing.
Yes, Manager's Toolkit. Exactly right. I figured if Harvard Business Review is writing something called Manager's Toolkit. Oh,
is that what it was called? I know nothing about it.
You never saw it, right? Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
I like the free access to the online tools part.
Yeah, very interesting. When we're competing with Harvard, we're very interested in what they're doing. I may speak there, but I know I don't have their name recognition just yet. I have to write my book first, right?
Yes, you do.
So those are some
things. Remember, send in the emails.
Yeah. Those are some things you can do. This podcast is running really long, and we didn't want to burden you too much, but we know how it is with books. Some people, we figured we'd give you a wide array of choices, and if you just find one or two and read them and you get some value, then you can come back to this and listen to it again and come up with 2 or 3 more and try to get through a book a month. And then when you're done with that, when you're used to that, try to do it in 3 weeks. It's okay to skip 50 pages in a book that you think is ineffective. If you read a book and you're 25 pages in, you think, boy, this is not helping me at all. Don't keep reading it. Stop reading it.
That's a great skill. I had a lot years and
me too.
Most of my life I had that difficulty.
Me too. If I started it, I wanted to finish. Yeah.
Yeah, it was impossible. If I read a page, I had to read the entire thing. And
yeah, and something else too. I think, in fact, in the book Love's the Killer App, Tim Sanders teaches you a way to read books. It's really powerful. It takes too long to describe it here. But if you really do a good job of reading the book the first time, you don't need to keep the book. And if you don't have a lot of storage space, if it's early in your career, you have a small apartment, or you don't have a lot of space at the office, gosh, just give the book away. Take some good notes and give the book away. How many books do I refer to that are in my bookshelf, even though I've got thousands of books on my bookshelf? Maybe only 20, and I have extra copies of those. I like seeing books in my office. It's a nice decoration, but do I really need them? No.
Enough. We've given folks a lot to read. So,
yeah.
We said we were going to pass on... We're thanking folks for voting for us at Podcast Island, the difference it made. We're going to share a short story as to how that impacted us, and I think end with asking them to vote for us again, and we'll explain why in a second.
Yeah. Let's just tell a story. People voted for us, and now we're the number 1 ranked business podcast at Podcast Alley. So what we'll talk more about later in future podcasts, maybe next month even for our registered subscribers, Manager Tools is not just a free weekly podcast. Imagine, if you will, having 200 to 250 of these podcasts aggregated and available to any manager in your organization. We are in discussions now with companies about that very thing, and that's going to cost them a good bit of money. In doing that, one of the things we're able to do is when I write an email to an old friend of mine, in fact, my roommate at the academy and the CEO of a Fortune 1000 company, former CIO of a Fortune 200 company, when I write him a note and say, "Hey, John, just want to catch up with you." And I say, "Would love to talk to you about the possibility of Manager Tools becoming part of what you do. It's something new." He knows me as a consultant. He's been a client of mine before. And I'm able to say that we're the number 1 business podcast in the country and in the top 50 on Podcast Alley. Well, what that means is that he goes out to Podcast Alley and takes a look. And he gets validation that we are the number 1 business podcast in the country because of the votes of our subscribers, of our listeners. So while the votes may seem a little bit like they're certainly not as meritocratic as revenue and sales, they have a specific business value, that credibility that provides us, that maybe because I'm talking to John and he and I are very dear friends, I don't need that, but it certainly doesn't hurt to validate that what he knows about me and the kind of involvement that I have with in business, it's going to turn out good. It doesn't hurt to validate that with an external source. So that's really an incredibly valuable incredibly important reason that why we ask you to vote for us at Podcast Alley. We got a kick out of watching our numbers grow. We also are realistic about who we are and what we're doing and the market that exists, because MuggleCast about Harry Potter is the number one, and it's got hundreds of votes. I think it's close to 1,000 votes. And those people who are voting are probably between the ages of 7 and 20. And we're thrilled for that. But when it comes to business podcasts, we believe our model is different, it's valuable, and right now, the validation we can get, as opposed to revenue or sales, more broadly, is something like Podcast Alley. So thank you for voting for us, and we're going to come back to the well and ask you every month. And so we want to ask again.
We're asking you now. It's a new month. It's November. And for those of you who are not familiar how Podcast Alley works, essentially your votes for the previous month don't really do much for you. It's you're re-ranked every single month. So to stay where we want to stay, we need to get votes, the same number of votes at least every month. So we're not going to ask you every podcast. That's too much. And we hate actually asking you at all. But in this case, we're going to ask you to go to our website. There's an easy link on the top left-hand side of the link where you can go vote for us and kind of help us out in terms of our rating for the month of November.
Super.
So with that, that's all we got.
Great. I enjoyed it, Mike.
Alrighty.
As always.
Thanks, everybody. And we'll try to do these special ones for our registered members once a month or so. So hopefully sometime beginning of December, you'll get another one of these just for you folks.
And encourage your friends who are subscribing to the feed but are not registered to come register, because there's extra content available.
All right, folks.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you all. And Mark, we'll see you next time.
Yep, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone, for listening. As always, we'd love to hear feedback from you on the podcast, and especially on this special members-only podcast we just did. As always, simply go to the website or send us an email at show@manager-tools.com. Also, it's a new month, so as we discussed earlier on the podcast, please go vote for us at Podcast Alley. There's an easy link on our website, and it makes it pretty hassle-free to do so. Thanks again, and you can look forward to seeing more of these special member-only podcasts in the future. So long for now.